The news media, my dear people, are making a great thing, as well they might, about the murder of two little children by their mother. And of course, this poor woman is going to have to suffer terrible sorrow and terrible punishment on account of this, as she should. But I hope that when you listen to all the screams of the newsmakers or the news gatherers and the news commentators, you do not fail to think about such matters as a Catholic ought. For instance, how is it that this woman cannot kill her two children, whereas a few years ago, when they were yet unborn, she might have, with the blessing of our government and the news media? What is the difference between murdering a child who has never seen the light of day and one who has, or whom others have seen? And how is it that O.J. Simpson can carve up his wife and he is a national hero, but this woman cannot do the same with her children? How is that? How does that work? And if the President of the United States can eliminate people who are a threat to his political power with never an investigation being undertaken, how is it that ordinary citizens have to answer for what they do? How is that? I don't know what your thoughts are on the subject, but I imagine that if anyone were to ask this woman, she would say, "I could not stand the crying anymore." Maybe she will never get a chance to answer that question, but I get the idea that a woman who is trying to take care of children without there being a father is very hard put to it, because there is no let up. She has to worry about all the expenses. She has to worry about someone taking care of them all the time. And she probably feels very much alone. Now, you know, we are not excusing the crime. But, pardon me, we have to ask the question, to what extent is the father guilty of this crime? Where is he in the picture? How much responsibility does he have for this terrible thing? Because he is supposed to be there. They will say, and they will say very offhandedly, "Oh, they were divorced." In which case I say, well then, where is the judge? How much of a part in the crime does he have to answer for? Because by what right did he tell the man, "You can leave her and the two children. Send some money instead of being where you promised to be"? I remind all of you married people, men and women, and that's the reason I brought the subject up, that Almighty God takes marriage vows very seriously. He takes them more seriously than a woman does from a man and a man from a woman. And a woman has a right to take those vows very seriously if she hears them from her husband. She has a right never to forget all the nice things that he said to her in an effort to get her to marry him. She has a perfect right to write them all down. All the weeks during the courtship, she has a perfect right to write them all down. Or if she wants, say, can I have that on tape? So that you and I never forget it. How you're always going to take care of me. How you're always going to love me. How you're never going to look at another woman, even when we are 30 years married. You're never going to let me be lonesome. You're never going to make me carry all the burden. You're never going to say an unkind thing to me. You are going to love me with all your heart, always. That's the way they talk. Isn't that true, ladies? When they are courting, they are all poets. You should write it all down and keep all those letters. Spend a little time away so they'll write some letters. Or get the little gadget whereby you can tape the phone conversation. Keep it all in careful file because you will need it. Or you will have reason to wish you had it. And you have a perfect right to demand that they stick to the terms of the vows. Because God will. And you men, you have a perfect right also to have a tape recorder. Because you have a right to ask the same thing. You have a right to expect that she will always love you, that she will never call you names, that she will stay with you always, that she will not spend money that you haven't made yet, that she will be proud of your children, as many as God gives you. You have a perfect right, you men, to expect that she will obey you. Now you done stopped preaching and gone to meddling, parson. You have a perfect right, you men, that when you say, that is enough, the discussion is over. This is what we're going to do, that she will say, you're the boss. And not to nag you out of the house. You have a right, you men, when you ask for a little quiet, that you get it. You have that right. The main thing is that both the men and the women have a right. And this is a legal right, and it is a religious right, and it is a religious obligation before God that you keep your word to each other spoken before and on the wedding day. I promise, I vow before God, I vow it. I will be a good man to you. I will be a good woman to you. You both have that right. And if it's not a happy home, it is due mainly to those things. Not keeping your word. If you don't want to get married, you young people, you girls and you boys, if you don't want to get married, you have a perfect right. You can be a sister. You might be able to be a priest. You can be a monk or a hermit, or you can be just a no good single man. You have that choice. But if you say, "I do," in a wedding ceremony, you're not free anymore. You are committed. And God will hold you to it. Now, this kind of talk, as you know, is altogether foreign to the world nowadays, and you're not going to hear this kind of talk with regard to this poor woman. You're not going to hear any of this to explain why a woman could do such a terrible thing. But all of us know, all of us, that is, who have children, know that children can drive a mother and a father not to do these things. That's extraordinary. But children drive mothers and fathers to cogitate or to threaten, "I am going to murder you, child, if you don't do this or that." They're not going to do it, but the words come because the children drive them to it. And you children are not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be sweet and obedient, whether you like it or not. At one of the places that I say Mass, I'll present this little question to you, parents, or any of you, because I don't know the answer. The woman has taken her two boys out of the public school because she has seen what the public schools have done to her older children. These two boys are, I think, about 12 and 14. They've been in the public schools that long. And now she is undertaking to teach them. And she came to me very recently and she said, "Father, I don't know what to do because they will not obey me. They say they don't like this homeschool business. They despise it. And they say that they are not going to cooperate." What does a parent, or what do parents do with children who simply will not obey? Do they whip them? Suppose after they whip them, they still don't obey. What do they do? You children, what would you do if you had children who would not obey? What would you do? Would you take them down to the sheriff's office and say, "You keep him for a while"? Frankly, I don't know what parents do with children who will not obey. They have a right to impose corporal punishment, but there is a limit to what they do with bad children, or can do. And so we have to remind children that you are answerable to God for the way you obey. You are bound to obey. And God will punish you much more severely if you don't than your parents can or are permitted. By the way, did you, dear people, realize that there is a bill in Congress right now, Senate Bill 70, which says that the United Nations will have the right to oversee how parents in this country discipline their children? And this bill forbids the children to impose corporal punishment, which is to whip their children. And the children may take their parents to court if they do, or if for any reason the children are dissatisfied with the parents. This is now a bill that is being considered and already has 50 senators to sponsor it. If things are right, the church is on the side of the parents in the hope that the church can urge the children, if not for the love of peace, and if not for the love of their parents, if not out of gratitude to their parents, at least for the fear of God, to obey their parents. I'll say it more simply. It is the place of the priest in the pulpit to tell the fathers and the husbands, do what you vow to do. Love your wives, even if they're not cute and beautiful anymore. Love them the way you said you would. Always, you said, always. I want only you. My life is altogether incomplete without you. I cannot go another day without you. So he said. And the church is supposed to tell the wives, obey your husbands. And I add, wives, hold your tongues. There comes a time when you're supposed to say nothing. And that is very hard for women. By the way, you young men, now this is an aside. If you find a girl whom you think you might learn to love, one little observation I would suggest to you. Find out if your girlfriend loves to talk. If she loves to talk, you better learn to love to listen. Because she is going to want you to listen. And she is going to want you to learn. And you children, the church tells the priest to tell the children to obey your parents, because that is your duty as children. You are supposed to obey your parents. That's a good thing. That is how you learn to be a good parent.